Thank you.
And welcome to the May 3rd edition of the Tree Restoration of Peace and Recovery Joint Committee hearing. They were in the first session on House Bill 3225 and 66. The chair's going to exercise the prerogative and ask for a little bit of a discussion on some of the just something to share with the committee that I think is
extraordinary. Wow, thank you. Good morning. I think you all have a copy of what I'm going to say. My name is Dana Erickson. I'm the coordinator for the Long Tom Watershed Council. And thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony to you today. The Long Tom Watershed Council is a volunteer organization established consistent with House Bill 3441 and approved by both Lane and Benton counties, unanimous and enthusiastic approval from them. 92% of our watershed is in private ownership, with the land uses split roughly 46% forestry, 31% agriculture, and 8% urban. Our council serves the 410 square mile Long Tom watershed and includes the communities of Monroe, Veneta, portions of Junction City, and half of Eugene. We also include Fern Ridge Reservoir. It's one of the two most frequently used in Oregon. I also run a statewide listserv on email that includes 52 watershed council coordinators in the state. Although I don't pretend to speak for them at any time, I feel that I understand many of their viewpoints, and I can provide connections for you with some of the coordinators if you'd like. Some of the concerns I have, one of them, the pace with which this bill is moving through the committee is of great concern to many members of watershed councils and their coordinators. We don't have an association or paid lobbyist, so keeping track of each piece of legislation and providing testimony is proving to be close to impossible. The process has been especially frustrating for those on the east side of the state. They feel relatively out of touch. Salem is a very long drive for them. I've heard that this committee is considering extending this process through May, and I would like to strongly encourage that. I also support a deliberative process in which a working group would discuss some of the more complex points after the session is over during the interim. We would like to see only the minimum necessary measures to implement Measure 66 done with House Bill 3225. Reorganization can really give the illusion of progress, but turning GWEB and OWEB, whatever it turns out to be, into a top-down organization will severely threaten the locally driven watershed councils that now exist. In my watershed, again, 92% of that land is privately owned. Most of these residents feel very strongly about doing the right thing and doing it on their own. They appreciate the local focus, the relative autonomy, and the educational and cooperative nature of the Long Tom Watershed Council and other councils. We will lose these independently minded landowners if the process becomes top-down. Watershed councils need to be assured basic support for administration as well as for on-the-ground projects. To have an effective and legally defensible Oregon plan, we must coordinate and communicate our activities and have sound science-based projects. Watershed councils are the local delivery mechanism for this. In almost all cases, they work closely with the soil and water conservation districts. Both groups must have line items in the budget to ensure sustainable framework for the Oregon plan. I fully support funding basic watershed council administration, monitoring, assessments, and action plans out of the 35% of Measure 66 funds. This allows the 65% to be for on-the-ground projects, as the original intent and spirit of Measure 66 called for. I would like to call attention also to the fact that state dollars going to watershed councils are leveraged and matched by local, federal, and many private dollars. Out of the total project costs, our two most recent long-term grant proposals asked for 29% of GWEM funds for coordination, only 29%, and 46% for our water quality monitoring program. So that's a really low amount for state funds. I'm very proud of our dollar-for-dollar effectiveness, and I strongly recommend that watershed councils be intimately involved in the discussions that allocate the Measure 66 funds. So thank you for the opportunity to comment. If I may ask one question, I was wondering what the intent of the committee is in terms of the 35%. I have heard that it will be used to backfill agency budgets. Well, I fully respect the work of the state agencies, and indeed we work with them to achieve the Oregon plan. A large portion of the 35% should go to watershed councils. Watershed councils provide a unique opportunity for landowners and residents to meet with, learn from, teach, and cooperate with local, state, and federal agencies, as well as with companies, organizations, and groups. There is no other forum where this takes place. It is already having incredible results for the lands and waters of Oregon. Please lend your full support to continuing this engagement by ensuring funding for Watershed Council coordination, monitoring, assessments, and action plans. Again, out of that 35%. So may I ask a question, Senator Ferraioli, about that 35%, just to get an update on that, or?
You can certainly ask, but
the community center no obligation to. Okay, so will you answer or not?
I think I get an answer in 3 months.
I will wait to hear your answer. Okay.
Mr. Chair, could I ask a question?
A question from
Lieutenant Warren. David, considering that it is real important to this committee to keep the energy at the bottom where the stakeholders are working on the land, do you see it as a beneficial thing to have Watershed Council people on the policy and oversight board?
Yes, I think it's very challenging, though, to select who those people will be. I mean, most of the Watershed Council coordinators that are discussing this on the listserv have really supported electing that from the Watershed Council. So instead of having someone just appoint, oh, well, you're associated with the Watershed Council, why don't you represent them? It's very difficult to represent Watershed Councils. There's a lot of uniqueness out there, the local flavor, the councils. It's the same thing with the soil and water conservation districts. So if we could elect them ourselves, that would be really useful.
Does there exist a venue where that process could take place?
All we have right now is a listserv that I just sort of set up over Christmas at home where people can communicate on email, but this does leave out about 30 people that are intimately involved with their councils, but we're trying to get them up on email as well. So that's a possible forum. The other one is GWEB holds their annual biannual conferences, which we'd like to see more often, and maybe that's a good place for the voting to take place. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of it's a question, part of it's a statement. We are extended by our leadership to be meeting this week, and so in your comments asking that we continue this through the month of May, our goal is to get it out this week, finished up this week.
Wow.
Hopefully we can do that. But I also have a question for you, and that is that as we attempt to fund the coordinators and the support staff for watershed associations, what are your thoughts on combining some of these watershed associations where there's several within just a few miles?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of, we all fall out differently on this. Of course, the more local and the smaller we get in a certain basin area, the more farmers and timber people and folks we can reach out to. And they always want to break us up. In the long term, we have 3 sub-watersheds, and everyone wants to have their own meetings, which we fully support. That's fine. I think it gets to be a challenge when we talk about state funding to handle the coordination and technical assistance. And I guess what I would just encourage is longer, more deliberative discussions about how we would break that up instead of just, a bill that outlines this is how it will be. Because sometimes a larger watershed might have 45% Forest Service lands, so that might not be as much of a challenge as, let's say, a basin with 92% private lands and each individual landowner with 2,000 acres to 2 acres.
Sorry, follow up, Mr. Chair. Where you have small basins, like you just alluded to, do you have coordinators in each one of those basins, or does your overall council? And that's what I totally agree that you want to break it down into as small groups as you can, but I was referring more to the coordinators.
Right. We have, for ours, it's 410 square miles, and we have one coordinator. Some basins are much bigger than ours, the South Tanyam, McKenzie, the Middle Fork, and some are smaller, actually. And I guess it really depends on the local flavor of it. Of the area. No matter what, there would always be a staff person that would be utilized, even if the basin got down to 10 square miles, just because there's so much to do out there. So if we err one side, one way or the other, smaller basins with a coordinator is always going to be better. But right now, we just have sort of volunteers that step up, but they're tired. They really need the staff support.
Thank you.
Senator,
Mr. Chair, thank you. in your opinion, do the coordinators see themselves as having a full-time permanent state job?
No.
Or state job?
Currently?
Yes.
So currently, no, we don't. Actually, it's been very difficult because we're really trying to motivate people towards this mission of everyone stewarding the land and the waters, and people are really, they're really warming up to that. I mean, the question I posed to them was, do the local people of Oregon want to do this or not? And all the 70 people at our original meetings were like, actually, yes, we do want to do this. But it's been very frustrating and hard to motivate everyone to keep doing this when our own jobs, you know, actually don't pay that well and also are constantly threatened by, you know, are we going to get this grant? Are we going to get this grant? So some kind of sustainable, secure support would be very good for councils, not just for the individual coordinator. It's for mailing, it's for postage, it's for keeping those connections going.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just the confusion, maybe you can clear up for me. Current structure is basically top-down because GWEB is basically part of the governor's office. All funding decisions are made from that level in grant form, and we are proposing a structure that would put some local people involved at that level, plus we're also proposing a structure that gives certainty of funding to the local level and gives them autonomy over that funding.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you see that change being more top-down than what we've currently got?
I guess there's lots of specifics that it's been very hard to keep up with. I think the overall initial feeling for all the councils was everything is working fine. Why are we changing things? So we would love to be involved in discussions so that we understand, you know, why are we reorganizing the GWEB board when it's working well? You know, there are regional review teams that go through our grants. These are regional review teams that understand each local council. They know what's going on. And they can spot a bad grant proposal, you know, right out off the bat. And I guess what we're nervous about is everything being changed. We're not quite sure how the new system will work. Especially with maybe longer processes like Senate confirmation of some of the members. We just really, people get exasperated by how long things take already in government processes, and we really want to just encourage landowners, just go out there. We're trying to eliminate barriers for you to do restoration, and that's what councils have been so effective at doing so far.
Follow-up? Whether GWEB is working fine is a matter of some speculation, and are you comfortable with the continuation of basically watershed coordinators being a grant-driven process, or do you think it makes more sense to have some solid funding to where the personnel that need to be in place at the local level have a little more certainty and they aren't driven by the fact that they can do good grant writing. They're driven more by, which would allow them to be driven by doing the right thing and mm-hmm. doing a coordinated effort on the ground. You know, this is
right.
One of the problems I've had
yes.
This is why we're trying to get to some more certainty for funding for local positions so that it isn't driven specifically by being able to write a grant that's the flavor of the month, more or less.
Having coordinators for basic watershed council support be grant-funded undermines a lot of the process, and it's also sort of a waste of time. We have a lot of grants to write to replace culverts, to, you know, plant things in riparian areas, to fence off areas, and those are actually, you know, they take quite a bit of detail and technical design out there with the landowners. So every minute we spend worrying about whether we're going to be here or not, it undermines the entire process. And by nature, grant funds are going to be more loose, less secure than some kind of, you know, maybe state funding process. And I think we can find local match for that. We can also find lots of local dollars for the project if we just have that basic coordinator in place to act as a hub for all these people coming together. If that one person is there, it's amazing the dollars that we can leverage from the local level and from private.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that the Dash 5 do address that in a way that no other set of amendments do.
I appreciate that comment. The thing that's clear to me, well, let's talk to Rick 13 first.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. It's my understanding that we're looking for about $2.4 million for watershed councils in the governor's budget. Sometimes a little tricky to find that, but that's my understanding of the number. And it's also my understanding that we have sent at the Ways and Means level the 35%, you know, for the administrative part, and that it's going to be difficult to have administration of watershed councils taken out of the capital expenditures part. So I think there's a problem that needs to be addressed. But I was interested in the watershed council's opinion of what kind of a budget we should have.
What kind of budget we should have? Mm-hmm. A budget that funds everything, of course.
Yeah. What would be the number that the watershed council has proposed?
Well, that's something I was talking with a couple people last night, actually, trying to figure out, you know, can we give a number? $2.4 million is the same that was given to the last biennium, and now we have more watershed councils, we're more effective, and we actually need more. And the only, you know, everyone wants more and more and more, but what this says is the Oregon plan is a success. It's working well, so let's keep supporting it. And I guess what I'd like to do is see a little bit of a working group such that we could come up with a good number, but $2.4 million is not enough for the watershed councils right now. We came up with an initial number about 2 months ago, and we were trying to work through this of $6 million, and that would fund the existing watershed councils at the most basic level for a coordinator.
In my follow-up, I guess I was really kind of getting to the point that we don't have a way to get a unified voice from the watershed councils
mm-hmm.
to come to us with a proposal for that number, and I find that would be helpful.
Okay. We're trying.
Yes, a minute ago I was listening to your response to Representative Cruz's first question about, you know, top-down and so on, and you came back, and as I listened to you, it kind of sounded like, you know, the old cliche, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you were saying, you know, that this is working and not wanting to mess with something that works to take an unknown. And I'm just kind of asking, how strong do you feel that that position is among the coordinators, that if it isn't broken, don't fix it? How strong do you sense it is out there?
That was definitely the initial reaction. But there are people that feel, sure, there's certain tweaks that would help. And I guess what's happening is this comes back to my first comment, everything is moving so quickly, and there's amendments that we can't even send out electronically. And so, you know, just a few of us are just volunteering, like, okay, we've got to get this information out, so we're trying to fax it across the state. But we haven't had any time to come together and say, what are the tweaks that really need to happen? And the coordinators, I mean, these are people that they do like five jobs in one. They're out there on the ground, they're pushing paperwork, they're doing everything. And this is just another thing that's really wearing us out, and it's going too quickly, because we also check in with our councils constantly. So if we could have some more time to have meaningful discussions, that would be great.
Let's see. Question from...
Thank you, Mr. Kochick. One of the things I thought I heard in your testimony was some concern about the cumbersomeness or time-consuming of the grant writing. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In light of that and in light of the other testimony, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, can you resolve that for me?
Well, I think it was a good idea, Representative Cruz. You know, we can write grants for specific projects. That's always helpful. Having to write a grant just to fund the basic council is a little silly. I guess we're relatively comfortable with the process, but it does take a lot of time and work to write the grants. We're okay with still doing that. That came out a lot on the coordinator listserv. We're okay with still doing that. We're getting used to it. But it's not a very stable, secure source, especially for basic coordination. The other thing, though, that's helpful when you have on-the-ground projects is to be able to take, you know, maybe a larger lump sum given to, once the council comes up with an action plan based on a scientific assessment and they have a list of projects, instead of writing an individual grant for every single project, to just be able to say, you know, these are the prioritized actions that came out of a science-based assessment. Let's do it. Let's put them on the ground. So if we could maybe have a more streamlined process in that.
Well, I appreciate the fact that it takes time and energy to write grants, and I also appreciate that it may put some watershed councils at an advantage and some at a disadvantage, depending upon the skill and expertise of their particular grant writers.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem that there's one, I think as you were indicating, one advantage to the grant writing, and that does kind of keep us dotting the I's and crossing the T's, if you wish, as far as the on-the-ground projects.
Right.
Make sure they are defensible. And thank you.
And I think a coordinated approach to that is good, with a scientific watershed assessment and then an action plan that prioritizes those projects. That's a very logical approach to them getting project funding, and that again ensures the you know, having the right projects on the ground, not just planting trees somewhere it doesn't really need it. So ecological and economic sense. Thanks.
I think we could probably spend another hour or so with Dana, because I was just fascinated to hear from the folks out on the ground. But I have a couple of observations and a question. So I think we need to move on to the next question. Does the committee have a sense that we're moving too fast? I'm just looking over at the glacial expression on our front. Constance, do you have a comment?
I'd rather move the amendments and vote.
Yeah.
Wait.
Dan, I think you point out something that's problematic for all of us, and that is, how do we keep connected with the Watershed Council on a landscape that's 5 million acres square? The interesting and extraordinary thing for me is that any one of the councilors are coordinating spend their Christmas vacation building an answer. So 52 people out of the 85 watershed coordinators that are, in fact, available by email. And I got a couple of questions relative to that little technological breakthrough. It's my understanding we don't have anything like that at the state level. Do we have an email address for every watershed coordinator? Yeah, they know coming from anyone. I guess the only email address we need is yours.
Okay.
Start with.
Okay. It's longtom, LONGTOM, one word, at ESN, which is EugeneFreeNet.org.
That would be longtom@ESN.org. And as a matter of fact, as this broadcast goes on to the Internet, you probably are now an international website.
Uh-oh. More nights at home on the computer.
Who covers the cost of managing that system? Is that just coming out of your pocket? Or?
Just me, right. I mean, I'm my own cost, I guess. I don't pay money to do it.
The issue of how we avoid just doing a bunch of random acts of kindness on the land has been one that's concerned the committee. And that does seek some kind of coordination.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not we call that top down and sit and kick the dirt and say, you know, shake our fists at the clouds, or whether we say that what we really are doing is creating a program that people can send their good grant proposals through.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've accomplished the same objective.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you do have some coordinating mechanism, we're not going to. A half a dozen different state agencies, a dozen different programs, and 85-plus watershed coordinators sort of moving in the same direction. So
mm-hmm.
That may be something that we have an antipathy for top-down management, but there does need to be some kind of coordination. I think it would be very valuable if we asked you to solicit an input from the watershed coordinators that you're met with. And that is, if they could ask the same questions to the committee, what would they ask? And if you could get us the list of the 10 questions, maybe we could get to the idea of answering, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. There are some things that we've learned over the course of the last 2 years, 2.5 years, and even since the legislative session from testimony, that would make the system coordination across the agencies a better community, more certainty of funding and financing, better processes and communication. But to start with,
I think every one of us that are on the system, and I know our committee administrator will be asking for your email address for the 52, because there's no reason for one watershed coordinator to have to absorb the cost of maintaining or working on the water. That at least should be something to begin to use as a tool for some. I'm going to go ahead and ask for committee staff. I want to thank you for bringing testimony. It's been very nice to hear from you, and I appreciate the work that you're doing on the school committee there, Mark.
Thanks.
For any last questions? Let's move on to a presentation by staff. There was earlier presented a direct comparison between different structures for voting membership on the existing GWEB as compared to what an Oregon Watershed Conservation Committee or Council or commissions would look like. And I'd like to have the staff walk through the different questions about what membership would be represented and how we would be broadening the base to EP Watershed Councils and Saltwater Conservation District members and agencies. So if you'll walk us through that, I'd appreciate it, Judy.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I did provide you again a side-by-side comparison that you had received before.
Can I just take a copy of this document? Please, can we get some more copies of this document?
I have three here.
Thank you.
And the members, for the members of the audience, until you receive that, I will be referencing both the dash amendment and the section number relative to each of these structures. On the sheet, if you will look at the right-hand side, the GWEB structure, there we're looking at the current structure of the board. You'll see five voting members there that are basically agency commission folks, first from Environmental Quality Council, Water Resources Commission, the Board of Forestry and the Fish and Wildlife Commission, as well as a Soil and Water Conservation Commission member. There are currently no local representatives, and there are non-voting members that are pulled in when the issues affect other agencies, federal agencies, including Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Forest Service, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and then within our own state, Oregon State University Extension Service, Department of Ag, and the Governor's Natural Resources Advisor. You'll see on the left-hand column the structure that is proposed in the Dash 5 Amendments, Section 8. And I will point out, first of all, that all of the new proposals do suggest a 11-member board. So on the left-hand side, you'll see the 11-member composition that the Dash 5 amendment suggests, again, in Section 8. The change in the commission representation is, instead of a Soil Water Conservation District member, you're adding the Board of Forestry. So, again, thank you, Mr. Chair, the Board of Agriculture. Which swap in for the current Soil and Water Conservation Commission member. And then you'll see six local representatives, two Watershed Council members, one from the east side, one from the west side, two Soil and Water Conservation District members, again, east and west, a tribal representative, and then one public member. Again, this also does suggest some non-voting members as advisory to that group, including the federal and state agencies, OSU, and the Governor's Natural Resource Directors. In addition, it does speak to two legislative representatives, again, as advisory to that body. Next, I want to point out, in the Dash 1 amendments, which were initially the interim committee members' initial run at this, if you will. If you, in the Dash 1 Amendment, Section 4, which would be exactly the same as the Dash 9 Amendment, Section 17. You will find, again, an 11-member board suggested. The five commission members all stay the same in these next proposals. That is similar to what you see on the left-hand side, again, with the Department of Agriculture in there. The main difference between all the rest of the proposals are in the six additional members. So the Dash 1s and Dash 9s call for six members with specific representation. They're suggesting a watershed council representative, one from soil and water conservation districts, one for urban residents, a city or county, for example, representative, forest industry representative, an agricultural industry representative, and an environmental group representative. The Dash 6 Amendment, Section 2, also call for those additional six members to be placed on the whatever the governing board is for the grant, but it leaves the membership unspecified as to representation. Finally, the Dash 10 Amendment, Section 17, again, specify the additional six members. Unspecified except to say that one of the six members shall be a tribal representative. So those are the basic options, at least drafted so far, and obviously the members here can create whatever membership that each person.
Just below the line of non-voting members, that's the advisory commissions and the legislators?
Correct.
So the 11 voting members are the commission members and the local representatives and water trade council, so water conservation district, tribal and the public on the
true
Dash 5.
That's correct.
And the Dash 5 came from the ad hoc working group?
That's right.
Can I bring up through these spokespeople, Greg Miller and Jeremy Lee.
Thank you, Chair.
Question?
Can I make a comment at this point?
Absolutely.
Well, it came to my attention again by the fishing industry, their lack of any input into this after all these years. And again, I'll state, if it's open to everyone, we don't have a problem. But if we go around and start listing who can be on there, and the fishing industry is not on there, we're going to run into a problem because they've been forced to be involved in this, or they've been, over the years, they've been the main course in funding, and when you look down and they look on the list of all these, there's no representative of the fishing industry anywhere mentioned when we break it down person by person. If it's open to everyone, there's no problem. So that's my comment.
Representative Thompson, I need to make an excellent comment. When you try to make a list, you always leave somebody off the list. By the same token, leave it open, we may accomplish the same objective and leave people off that list.
We'd be willing to take our chances.
Better have it open than specified references?
Yes.
So let's note that there's an absence of a representative, either commercial or sporty. Just keep that issue in front of us.
Yeah, just a fishing representative.
Mr. Cho.
I
understand Representative Thompson's concern, but I also look at we have a member of the Fish and Wildlife Commission, we have two watershed council members, two soil district members. Admittedly, the ones on the east side probably aren't going to be in the fishing industry, but the ones on the west side certainly could be, and it seems how these are all governor's appointments. I think this still allows him the flexibility to make sure that all parties are represented in who he chooses out of this mix. It's our desire in this to make sure that the people on the ground are connected to this, and certainly I would assume that in any coastal watershed councils that there are fishing representatives there, so they certainly have the ability to be included.
Mr. Chair, I'll make one final comment because I know what people look forward to. Let's remind you that there is a big difference between a fisherman and a watershed council member. And I agree that it's possible it might, but it's not specified, and this list goes to specificity. So I'm in favor of keeping it open.
Representative Thompson, your point is all made. If the list isn't kept open, then we at least have to acknowledge that you, at least in your observation, a glaring error of the lack of inclusion of official persons. It is supported, Commissioner. Point well made. Working group representatives, Mr. Miller and Ms. Lee, the structure of the dash 5, how did you arrive at this group? And I see you have a memo here that talks about an expanded working group. Perhaps you could address both, please.
Members of the committee, I'm Jan Lee, one of the work group members on 3225. We have recently expanded that work group considerably, as the attached list will testify to, and we've been working with representatives of that group to come up with some mutual decisions. And today we're not especially speaking to the Dash 5 amendments or to any of the other specific amendments, but to what we came to agreement upon, 10 guiding principles. Greg Miller will respond to those.
Representative Bunkley? If I might just ask, you say this was not the Dash 5. I had been led to believe that this working group is the Dash 5.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, Representative Lundquist, Mr. Chair. We are working from the Dash 5 in dealing with the issues, but the go-home concepts, so to speak, are much broader than that. They could be encompassed in one of the other documents.
So you did not necessarily put the group Dash 5 together?
Yes. Yes, Representative Lundquist, we did put the Dash 5 amendments together.
Okay.
And many of us prefer the Dash 5 amendments.
Okay.
For the record, Greg Miller, Warehouser Company, maybe I could, there were two questions asked. I believe Co-Chair Senator Ferrioli asked how we got to the sketch you see there with the list of the new structure, and that came out of the core group of the natural resource groups as we sat down and looked at a new structure and looked at distribution and proportion and looked at the current GWEB map itself in the region and tried to find some equity in the representation, and as it's been noted, we failed miserably in equity because we put a list together and left folks off. When we have since broadened our work group out in these concentric circles and now into a much larger work group, and the list that you have in front of you reflects that larger work group, on the 10 go-home concepts, the list that we have in front of you, you'll see in number 4, we talk about some level of change to the current governance structure that would provide for independence, geographic diversity, and grassroots, layperson, local government representation, trying to give some broader categories. I still didn't mention fishermen in that, but I'm assuming somewhere in that list there you'd find a fisherman in there. But we recognize that in trying to put that structure that you're comparing in front of you right now, that we were somewhat limited in terms of trying to find a number of people with the right geographic representation. So we kind of took a step back from that and gave you a broader 30,000-foot view as opposed to the real specific. Does that answer the question on that side of it? If I might just explore with you the genesis of the 10 go-home concepts. Last time we were before you, Jan and I were before you, we kind of threw the book at you. We gave you a great big document, Dash 5s, lots of reference material. We got a lot of comments back on that from various members of our work group. There's still a core group of us in the natural resource work group, core group, that support the Dash 5s in terms of the language and where it's headed, but as we received the comments back. We recognize it's a very daunting task to stitch all that together, so we took a step back and put together what we think is something more manageable for you, which is kind of two pages, front and back, of go-home concepts, 10 principles that we've got agreement on. Now, I put draft on the top of this. As of Friday, I could have put final, but I took the weekend to restate these, and I wanted to be sensitive to our broader work group that the words that we debated and talked about in our Friday afternoon meeting, that they reflect are reflected here in this document. I'm pretty confident that the 10 items in front of you are areas that we can agree on in terms of concepts. So rather than read them all through to you, I think you're able to read through those 10, but I would like to focus on just a few. Now, the first one we spent a lot of time on in terms of principles and policies that institutionalize the Oregon Plan. In dash fives and dash twos and all the dashes you have in front of you, there are that kind of language in those documents, and we would support having principles and policies articulated in a bill. The second one that comes to mind, improved funding for implementation of Oregon Plan. We were actually able to reach agreement among the group that we'd like to see improved funding for the Oregon Plan. That's a nuance that was reflected in a variety of participants, including the governor's office. One that you folks have struggled over quite a bit, capital expenditure definition that meets the spirit and intent of Ballot Measure 66, that allows for research and monitoring of projects and programs. There are 7 definitions out there right now floating around in different variations. I got a list of them. As we debated Friday afternoon, I won't say we were totally inclusive in terms of our work group. It's kind of like who's the last person at the table got a shot at this, but we did come down on the dash sevens with a tweak or two, if that gives you some guidance along the lines of language. There is a section in there that is not in the dash sevens that does not speak directly to full fee and less than full fee interest, and we would add that to the dash sevens. I mentioned 4. One that I think is extremely important that you heard from that you heard about this morning, and also was articulated in the governor's staff's comments to us, was better funding and investment out to the local levels, whether it's councils, districts, or others, for these on-the-ground projects. I guess another area that I would focus on that was extremely important to folks is some level of transition language for the implementation of these changes, and our work group is working on this kind of transition language we could give to the committee to help you sort through as you implement changes in whatever bill you put together. The second thing
with the transitional language being crafted in cooperation with the Measure 66 proponents?
Yes, absolutely. This language would not be done in a vacuum. We would like to get that in front of the work group. In terms of expediency, though, we'd also like to get it in front of the committee, too, so you folks can have a feel for what that looks like. We're more focused on the physical aspect of the transition in terms of structure or funding mechanisms or those kinds of things. The second page that we handed to you, interim activities, I don't have those listed in numerical order. They were areas that we couldn't necessarily, we all agreed in terms of the importance of them, but we couldn't get to agreement on whether they ought to be in this bill and believe that they ought to be a part of interim activities relative to this discussion and what you were able to put together as a final bill. I guess what I would say, though, I have a footnote at the bottom, and I'm not going to spend any time on these. You folks can read through them and ask questions if you wish. At the bottom, I have a footnote in there that talks about a date certain, so that these issues and concepts are developed during the interim and actually acted upon in the next legislative assembly. And in fact, maybe the direction to do that could be included in the transition language.
Questions? Next, the last one, Transfer Natural Heritage Council. But I wasn't able to.
Well, we couldn't reach agreement in our committee or in our work group that that ought to happen in this bill. There are folks on the work group that would like to see that happen, and I'm sure you can bring up, I think Pat Amadeo could answer that question for you, and what they mean, the proponents or the folks that put together that proposal, what and how that relates to it. Our work group, our broader work group, could not get to conclusion. We believe it ought to happen, but at least in this bill, we thought that that was a pretty big bite, and we ought to do that in the interim. And that was the sense of the work group, anyway.
And so by transfer, you mean that it would be that your group, most of your group, was indicating that it would be better if that Natural Heritage Council function happened in a different bill or in a different process outside of this. That's what you mean by transfer, like transfer to a different
right, process. I guess that's a good way to say it.
Okay.
I might add to that if I might, Representative King, Mr. Chair. The database that that group has was of interest for transfer as soon as possible, but we thought it would just not physically be possible to bring the whole structure over unless it were dealt with in the interim and pieces.
Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the dash fives, in the makeup of the commission that spoke to five, I believe, out of the 11 should come from each of the Cascades. Could you speak to that, or is that still a valid? Is that still valid?
Mr. Chair, I think the broader group would like to see it not as confined, but the original group really felt that because we're creating the division so that three lay west of the Cascades, there needed to be some way to be certain that Eastern representatives would still have a viable role on the commission. So at this point, I believe that you'll hear different proposals from individual groups of the working group. The people I represent have a lot of interest east of the mountain, so I may be a little stronger feeling about that issue.
Is it fair to say that with the working group you have now, that if we address all of these go-home issues, that your working group is happy? That's the goal at this point?
I'm probably going to get shot, and I can't see what the heads are doing back there in the audience. We asked our work group to come here at 7 o'clock this morning, sit on the front row, and we don't see too many in the front row. So I am assuming that they would be very good.
Now look at the back row.
Roy's getting ready to leave. So yes, I believe if they bill, whether if it's House Bill 3225, contain these 10 principles, we would be ecstatic.
Thank you. Regardless, I mean, we hear the makeup of this commission. It is certainly subject to debate, and there are several ways we could do that, but could we characterize the feel of the work group that they're still pretty much in general supportive of the structure, whatever the makeup happens to be, but changing the structure from current structure to the one in the dash fives?
Representative Cruz, I don't believe that we in the broader work group we have consensus on the dash five structure. That would not be accurate. We have consensus around number four of this list that some level of change to the current governance structure that provides for independence. I want to underscore independence. We talked a lot about that word. We'd like to see the commission have some level of independence, geographic diversity, and we'd like to see grassroots elevated, lay people elevated to the commission. what we hear a lot about from the watershed councils and the districts and others out there is to have that. Maybe the current structure has some of that right now under GWEB, but there seems to be a need or a desire to have more of that input from the ground level at the commission level, having some input there. So, but I do want to underscore the word independence. That was a word that we did come to consensus on. But in terms of the exact dash fives, no, we don't have total agreement on that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Okay. Maybe I probably asked the question a little bit wrong, Greg, but is there, among this group, is there violent opposition to this?
Violent opposition to dash five? To the structure under dash five?
No, I'm not talking about the specific language of the dash five. I'm talking about the concept of moving the GWEB to a commission or whatever it is, to that structure, to that level of independence. Is there violent opposition to the concept?
No, I don't see it in our current structure of our work group. No, I don't see violent opposition at all.
In fact, Representative Chris, Mr. Chair, I think that there's a strong feeling to have the 11-member commission. It's just a question of who should the six local representatives be.
Mr. Morgan.
Greg, I heard you talking about the committee's discussion on the need for a structure that provides independence, or provides for independence. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit about what the committee means about independence?
You want to take a shot at that?
Oh, okay. Try it. Yes, Representative Morgan, Mr. Chair. We were looking at a body where all of the programs would come under the structure so that it did need to really have its own independence. It would not be immediately under the governor's office, preferably. It would have some guidance through advisory members that would interact with it, the same way that it would have advisory from interactive legislative members who would work with the group. And I think that made people a little more comfortable to bring all the programs over there, have its own revenue stream so that its budget is reviewed as a total document instead of the current process where the pieces all have to be gathered together.
We have Representative Jensen in this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The transfer of the National Heritage Council functions. As I've heard discussion about this, it seems to be a concern about the database that they have. And is there anyone in the working groups that is going to be able to tell me why it is necessary for us to transfer their functions in order to have access to that database?
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Pat Amadeo, Mr. Chair. Representative Jensen, there is no reason that anybody can't have access to the information in that database. Anybody in the state currently has access to it, but we thought it made sense, since this is the one centralized place in Oregon where data is collected, that it be housed within state government. Currently, that function is...
Okay.
It's natural resource data. It is information on species and flora and fauna in the state. It is currently under contract, being contracted out to the Nature Conservancy through the Division of State Lands. The Nature Conservancy is happy to continue the function, but I serve on the board, and the board has had considerable discussions about the need, or the assumed need on behalf of the state of Oregon, to have that function performed in-house. And that is why it's suggested to be transferred, because it is of growing significance. That's the only reason.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. I guess, following up on Representative Cruz's questions, what is the discussion amongst your group? Make sure he's listening.
Sorry. We're having a disagreement up here.
Okay.
I told you, Monday morning.
I wanted to ask a question of the discussion within your group. as to whether this board or commission should be an expanded GWEB or a standalone commission, because I'm not clear on what your position is at this point.
Let me see if I can answer that, Mr. Chair. GWEB primarily is the granting entity of monies that go out in the field. The standalone entity has a function far broader than that. It includes coordinating state actions, both GWEB funding and state agency actions, to make sure they meet the intent of the Oregon plan. So its function is substantially greater than just the current GWEB function, which is merely a granting function.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair. I think I understand that concept. I guess I'm interested in the discussions you've had as to whether we should make that leap in one swing, or whether we should expand the OWEB board and get them online and get them working with a huge expansion of the funding that they're available, and take it in pieces, or whether we should try to do it all at once.
Co-chair, naturally, the work group, as best as I can judge, believe it supports the independent structure aspect of it almost to a person, I believe. Keep in mind that we have not expanded this work group now into state agencies or the governor's staff, but the interest groups that are represented on that list feel very supportive of an independent structure.
What I might add, Mr. Chair, is that we see that it would take a little time for the transition. We believe that the legislation should adopt the structure, and then it may take some time for the existing members to transition through confirmation procedures, et cetera. So there needs to be some timelines in the legislation to allow the process to move forward.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair. Knowing how difficult and time-consuming it was just to serve on the Interim Oversight Committee, does your group see that the commission, and I think, Pat, maybe you answer this, but I'm concerned that that's a huge job for one commission. And do you see the commission being the oversight and then having another OWEB board, or do you see that one group doing the whole thing? And I'm just wondering how that would function, because the grant program alone is going to be a tremendous task, let alone the oversight aspect.
Let me see if I can answer that, Mr. Co-Chair, and I assume that anybody who doesn't disagree or has a correction like me will come forward. We assume that the commission will carry out both functions, but it would not be inappropriate to suggest that they might want to rely upon a subcommittee or others on the granting component of the work. We also assume that the legislature and the governor are going to stay very much involved. This will continue to be an executive branch agency. So in terms of day in and day out coordination with state government, we assume this entity will carry on that function. At the same time, we assume that the governor's office will continue to be involved and make sure that coordination happens as well.
Yes,
we'll just move that ministerial function out of the governor's office.
We have questions from Representative Jensen, but I'd like to just bring it, Mr. Hamlin. Who's from the back of the room, front of the room, so I assume that means you have something to add.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've previously spoken about the difficulties just administratively we have when we have interest groups that are required to be represented on a board. We have all the other difficulties of gender representation, interest group representation, party representation, ethnic and geographic on top of that. And we would ask you not to lay out what this should be other than by geographic region. More importantly, though, I want to go back to what has happened with the biggest grant program in the region, which is Bonneville's grant program, and it's moving in exactly the opposite direction. Initially, the law allowed the principal folks who got these grants, who have a major role in determining who got the grant. And after a while, that program came into a great deal of criticism for having this built-in conflict of interest problem. And Senator Gorton from Washington made this a cause of his and wrote special legislation to take those interests, Fish and Wildlife agencies and tribes primarily, out of the process or reduce their role in the process and make it more neutral. We're setting up a situation here in these amendments that allow for watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts to create the same situation where we have folks who would be candidates for grants also being part of the grant-making process. And it sets up a potential conflict situation that we think is better avoided by a board which has folks on it who represent geographic regions but don't necessarily represent interests.
Based on your comments, if there was representation by geographic region, would it also be a desirable thing to limit the field of candidates to people who have some expertise and understanding of these issues?
Representative Morgan, yes, absolutely. And when the governor's office makes appointments, we try to find people who do have expertise. This in particular is a commission which would require a great deal of time which requires obviously a great deal of interest and expertise to be able to evaluate these grant proposals. So I think that's a good suggestion.
Representative
Jensen,
did you have a question?
Yes, I think so. And I'm curious in your response to Representative Nesherly's question a minute ago about the expanded GWEB or whatever we're calling it, and the changing of functions of that. If perhaps the proposed changes is something that may give the Watershed Council some heartburn, that is getting away from the basic hands-on grants that they have and getting into an expanded administrative type of group that may never get back to the water and the grants for the Watershed Council. Have you had any conversations about that?
Representative Jensen, Mr. Chair, we have had those discussions, and our original concept was that there be some base funding out of the 35% to provide some funds to each area of immediate resources and then have a grant program for the larger portion of the resources. You don't see that in the Dash 5 specifically. We refer to it in language as a concept, but nothing about numbers, how much it should be, how it would actually work on the ground. But I think that was something many of our members felt would be important so that we weren't spending all of the time at the local level writing grants for basic funding.
Representative Lundquist
got a question.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Prior to Mr. Marley talking about the conflict of interest, Senator and I were talking about this exact issue. And I'd like to comment for you, Ms. Lear, Mr. Miller, in regard to your group's position on that. It seems sort of logical to me that there certainly could be a conflict of interest. You have at least two members could come from Watershed Council and Soil Conservation District out of the same basic region and would have an impact. Can you comment on that, please?
Representative Lundquist, I believe the discussion around conflict of interest with those representatives on the commission that may be directly associated with Watershed Council or Soil and Watershed District. The concern there is that they would have an undue influence on the money that would be distributed out to the ground, and frankly, I don't think that we really thought that that would occur. Certainly, that's a possibility, and that's a good point, and what we're continuing to hear as we listen to Mr. Hemingway's comments and other folks that have given us input into the structure, that having such a specific category on the commission may not be the appropriate way to go. So that's another point that we ought to consider in this dialogue. But we had not really contemplated that there would be a conflict of interest.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize, Mr. Hemingway. Monday morning, my mind's not here as well. I think I called him the wrong name. But anyway, appreciate that.
Well, I'd like to clear up for the record, while we were, Pat and I were having a little side conversation here about item number three, which was the capital expenditure, and as you can well imagine, we've had plenty of conversation on this matter, and we still are dialoguing about that. As this reads, Pat pointed out that one could interpret this discussion around the research and monitoring as a free-ranging opportunity within the capital expenditure definition, and that was not the intent of the group. We would want to put some words in there like allow for some research and monitoring directly related to the projects and those programs that are going out on the ground, so that there's not this free-ranging aspect of it. So hopefully you folks will not interpret it that way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of observations and then a question. I guess when Pat was talking, I've been trying to figure out, Mr. Chair, how people have viewed this new structure as being top down. Because it certainly isn't intended that way, but when we talk about the fact that it's now dealing in policy, I now see how somebody, if they wanted to, could spin it to appear to be top-down, and it certainly was never the intent, so I guess, it's certainly being spun that way because some folks are coming up and saying this is top-down, and obviously it's viewing it from a very biased position. I guess the question would be for Roy. First of all, what Representative Lundquist was talking about conflict of interest. I mean, one could have certainly said in some of the granting that the current GWEB board did that maybe there was some conflict of interest with funds going to state agencies and the fact that the folks on the commission certainly come from a locality, and that locality is getting the money, well, then they could say that there's a conflict of interest. I guess the only way we totally avoid potential conflict of interest here is to have people serve on the commission that don't know and don't care about any of this stuff, or maybe you're from outside of the state, but I don't think that's what we're after, and the history of this program has shown that conflict of interest has never really been a problem. And even if we went with the structure of in the dash five, I don't see how it really becomes a problem then, because one person out of 11-member board who may advocate for their local district or their local watershed council has to convince the other 11 that it's viable. So it's not a way that this could be incredibly heavily weighted one way or the other. My question for Roy is I am not sure how, under the current structure, we're suggesting that the governor is prohibited from addressing diversity issues as far as makeup, because if you look at the makeup of watershed councils and public and municipal things like that, I mean, it's certainly a wide-ranging enough group that I would think all concerns that he has could potentially be addressed in even in a more narrow definition of who should serve than just anybody.
Representative Cruz, there is some flexibility there, but when you start naming groups to be represented on a group, on a board, you reduce that flexibility. And I can assure you, when you are in that situation of trying to put people on a board like that, it becomes exceedingly difficult to find balance when you have specific slots reserved for specific interests, because you're also expected to find gender balance, ethnic balance, partisanship balance, and geographic balance, and as well as interest group balance. And it's far easier to have something that has maybe a geographic requirement for balance, then we try to fill the slot, and if we haven't done the right job, then the Senate can tell us to go back and start over. But I've been in that situation of trying to fill slots on a commission like this, and it is very difficult. With respect to the conflict of interest issue, I'm not saying that there is necessarily a conflict of interest, but we want to have a program where no one could even allege it. And I think one of the reasons that we support an expanded board to put citizens on instead of folks who represent commissions is in order to have that balance and have no appearance of conflict of interest.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, on that. In deciding who sits on the commissions, I'm assuming that balance is also, I mean, that the governor also attempts to reach balance in that, too. Would you agree with that? Obviously within the scope of the function of the commission, but still, you try to achieve balance, however that would be defined in that universe, don't you?
Representative Cruz, whenever there is a commission, the appointing authority, and I've worked for three of them, tries to find balance across all those different lines.
Right.
And it is a difficult task. It is a difficult task to find a female fisherman who is a Republican from southwestern Oregon. Who
probably be harder from Portland.
Yeah. You know, I mean that
you're better than Morgan Fisher. So I just
that's the slot you have to fill. And you know, you've got somebody who happens to be a female fisher person from southwestern Oregon, but who happens to be a Democrat. Yeah. And it's just a terrible position to have to be in. It slows up the appointment process, and it makes it more difficult.
Okay, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, please, I'm going to recognize your message before he explodes here.
Mr. Chair, I'd hate to see that. So.
Yeah. I think what the co-chair is worried about is the time, and he's got to start what the FMW hearing is, really. But I wanted to ask you a similar question to what I asked Greg about the difference between the commission and the expanded GWEB or OWEB. And the reason I think it's important is that as we're getting down to decision time for this committee, we need to know where the governor is and where the showstoppers are, where the vetoes are. So,
Representative Messer, we support a commission with an expanded number of people on it to an 11-person commission where those members are, those public members are confirmed by the Senate. I guess that makes it an independent commission for grant writing. What we do not support is having that commission have expanded powers to try to do the coordination and other parts of the program, which we think is necessarily a centralized function that has to be within the governor's office.
So, to paraphrase, you're in favor of a standalone commission being its own agency as long as they don't have oversight powers over other agencies?
That's correct, Representative Nesterly. We think the program works now. We have been comfortable with having Water Resources be the fiscal agent, but we can accept an appointed commission that oversees this grant process.
Thank you.
Representative Chesky, you have the luxury of the last word from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering that really if you're having difficulty with the female Republican and the female Democrat, where are the female independents from?
Yeah, good
point.
Good question.
Our objective is to try and do a system by the end of the week. The central issue that we'll need to deal with is the structure of the organization. So I appreciate all the panel's work, and we're going to begin thinking about how we're going to pull this together for the legislation. With that, we're adjourned until tomorrow.
Yeah.